WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Jury selection in the federal corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan continues tomorrow. Madigan held that role for 36 years under seven Illinois governors. In Springfield, he was known as the Velvet Hammer for his subtle but powerful grip on state politics. In March 2022, he was indicted on 22 counts of racketeering and bribery charges for allegedly using that official position to enrich himself and his associates. This trial is expected to take 10 weeks. Now, for everything that you need to know to follow it as it unfolds, we invited Chicago Sun-Times federal courts reporter John Seidel into the studio. We can't really overstate how big of a deal Madigan was in Illinois politics. Nearly four decades as a speaker. That's the longest in American history. Two decades running the state Democratic Party. So I started by asking John, is it safe to say Madigan was the most powerful politician this state has ever seen?
You know, I don't know about most. This is the land of Lincoln, right? You know, so we've had some presidents. You know, former Senator Barack Obama has done okay for himself, but Madigan's really up there, and he's a student of another powerful politician in the state's history, the late Mayor Richard J. Daley. He really kind of studied the way his honor used to run the show.
Yeah.
And so, but Madigan's near the top. And, you know, I've been discussing with some people, he might actually be the most significant to be prosecuted in this way. All the other names we talk about, none of them have really faced criminal charges. Maybe the closest would be former U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert, who faced his own criminal charges.
Right.
He was a couple heartbeats away from the presidency. But
well, let's get into those charges. Tell us more about what the U.S. Attorney's Office has brought against Madigan. What's he accused of doing?
Well, the big theme of the case is that he's accused of leading a racketeering enterprise, a criminal enterprise. And what do we mean by that, right? So they're saying that his political organization, his office as speaker, and his law firm, he used it all to enhance his power and to enrich his associates and allies criminally by actually breaking the law. And so that's what they're alleging with this racketeering scheme, is that he committed racketeering acts, which are various crimes, to help broaden his power.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then we can break it down further. There are kind of two buckets of other kinds of schemes. On the one hand, you have these bribery schemes involving ComEd and AT&T that we've seen in other trials, in which people were getting paid very good money for doing do-nothing jobs, for accepting do-nothing jobs, all in an effort to keep the speaker happy and keep him, help have him either move bills through the legislature or honestly just not kill a bill. We've seen that with ComEd and AT&T, but there's also another series of schemes that are more akin to what we saw in the trial of Ed Burke last year, where he's allegedly out there squeezing developers, using his powerful position as speaker to get money for his own private tax law firm and personally benefit that way.
So who's Michael McLean? Who's the other person on trial here?
Yeah, Michael McLean is a longtime friend of Michael Madigan's. McLean was a lawmaker in the 70s, and then he turned to lobbying. And he developed this reputation in Springfield as kind of being Michael Madigan's messenger, whereas when you were talking to Michael McLean, you knew you were actually talking to Michael Madigan, that he was passing along his instructions. And in fact, the government alleges that Michael McLean was an agent of this so-called Madigan, this criminal Madigan enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michael McLean was one of those who was actually convicted last year in the ComEd trial of a scheme to bribe Madigan. And now he's on trial with Madigan for his role in like the squeezing business out of developers schemes, those kind of charges.
And let's touch more on former Alderman Danny Solis. Now, he wore a wire and captured secret recordings that will be used in this trial, but he's got his own checkered past. Isn't that right?
Yeah, he really does. So Danny Solis was the alderman of the 25th Ward in Chicago for, I believe, 23 years, something more than two decades. But the FBI began investigating him, and they have alleged in the past that he was trading official acts for things like campaign contributions, prostitution services, even Viagra. This all came out early in 2019, and he's already been pointed to as an Exhibit A of Chicago corruption by defense attorneys. You know, Danny Solis was a key part of the Ed Burke trial. Defense attorneys tried to dirty him up there, and mm-hmm. I'm sure they will be doing the same thing here.
You've got a great piece up online right now at suntimes.com where you point out that we actually already know quite a bit about the government's case against Madigan, thanks to what you call, quote, explosive court documents. Just broadly, tell us what's in them.
So the documents that you're talking about is the indictment. There's the FBI affidavit that details the investigation of Solis and another proffer by prosecutors laying out what kind of testimony we should expect. I mean, these documents, they lay out the allegations in the ComEd and AT&T schemes, as well as the law firm schemes. We also know a lot about this case because so much of it has come out in the ComEd and AT&T trials as well. But, you know, I want to point out, it's as much as we fear that some of this may be a rerun, that we already know a lot of the allegations here. Mm-hmm. It came out last week that one of the first witnesses in the trial is going to be Elena Hampton, whose allegations of sexual harassment against a Madigan aide, not against Madigan, but a Madigan aide in 2018, really threatened Madigan's grip on power before any of this public corruption stuff became public. Mm. So even though we've heard a lot of this before, Elena Hampton, she's going to take the witness stand. We haven't seen her testify yet. And this is all going to be part of the government's effort to prove the racketeering enterprise. And so I think there's still more that we've yet to learn.
That's right. So to your point, John, this case did not come together very quickly, right? The FBI conducted a 10-year investigation into Madigan. So what do we know about why they started looking into him in the first place and his activities?
You know, it's really interesting to go back to the very beginning of this because, as so many corruption investigations do, this actually began, as much as we can tell, with a developer in Chinatown. A completely separate scheme. He was a developer who was cheating people out of money in the development he was working on in Chinatown. He got caught by the feds, and he decided to cooperate, much like Danny Solis and others did.
Yeah.
And he was this gentleman named C. Wong, who he started working with Danny Solis, providing information to the FBI. And in August of 2014, actually went into a meeting with Danny Solis and Michael Madigan and secretly recorded it. And that was kind of the beginning, right? Like mm-hmm. they started just pulling on that thread, seeing what Danny Solis was up to and his relationship with Michael Madigan. And they continued to explore it since then. So, it's just interesting how it completely unrelated thing, but the government has acknowledged that this was kind of like the catalyst for how we got here today.
So what is Madigan's defense going to be at this point? What do we know, if anything, about the types of arguments that his defense attorneys might make to be like, you know, hey, our guy is innocent.
Yeah.
Yes, he was a powerful politician, but he didn't cross the line.
Right. So again, we've kind of got two kinds of schemes. And I think what we'll hear when it comes to ComEd and AT&T is that Madigan didn't really have an understanding of what was going on, that there was no quid pro quo, right? There was no this for that when it came to whether or not his people associated with him would get jobs and whether or not he did anything or did not do anything with legislation that was moving through the Capitol. When it comes to the law firm schemes, I think, again, they're going to target Danny Solis. Danny Solis is trying to stay out of prison. This is every defense attorney in town mm-hmm. has talked about this. Danny Solis is trying to save his skin, and he's going to get up on the witness stand, and he's going to dirty up Mike Madigan. And that's what the defense is going to say, and they're going to ask jurors not to believe Solis.
So we've got the prosecutors, the defense, of course, the judge and jury. Let's start with the man on the bench. I got to read this Sun-Times headline. Quote, Madigan judge has experience with Shakespeare, Jordan, as in Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. and the law used to target ex-House Speaker. So what should we know about Judge John Blakely?
Well, just to walk through that headline a little bit. I mean, first of all, Judge Blakely, he's got a background in theater. You know, he's according to testimony when he was confirmed, he actually performed in London. Yeah, no, and showed some interest in theater with one of the potential jurors this week. Michael Jordan, he presided about 9 years ago, I guess, over a civil trial that involved Michael Jordan. So Michael Madigan's not the most prominent defendant to ever be in Judge Blakely's courtroom. He's had Michael Jordan on the stand in that courtroom.
Wow.
In a civil case, to be clear. And then the racketeering law. Look, I mean, it was always said about Judge Blakely is his father is the one who wrote the federal RICO statute. It's kind of a legal legend. And so
we're clear, RICO, the Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act.
Exactly.
Which targets what?
Well, it targets organized crime. So famously, it's been used against mobsters, street gangs. But more recently, we've seen it in unusual context, like R. Kelly in New York prosecuted for racketeering. And now we have Maggie. This is all in which alleged that these people are involved in enterprises that are breaking the law to further its goals, right? So Judge Blakey's father wrote that law. And even when Judge Blakey was being confirmed by the U.S. Senate, it was pointed out right away, his father wrote the RICO law. But Judge Blakey knows it too. It's not just his dad. He's been involved in the state RICO law as well. And, worked as a prosecutor.
All right. Well, let's talk about the jury. How has jury selection gone so far?
Yeah, it's been slow. Judge Blakey originally wanted to have opening statements tomorrow. That's obviously not going to happen.
Sounds like it's more like next week now. Right?
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on how much work they get done tomorrow. I think if they can, if they manage to seat a good number of jurors tomorrow, maybe we could have openings by the end of this week. But, you know, the judge does seem to be aiming toward Monday, a week from today.
The 21st.
Right. Yeah. So in the meantime, we've got 11 jurors seated so far. You know, the nurse, an educator, somebody who works for a Goodwill distribution center. We've also had some other interesting jurors, like a woman who claims that her longtime best friend, Becky, figured out that she was probably being called for jury service in Madigan's trial and said, if you get on the jury, you should convict. But to be clear, the juror clearly has a different point of view than Becky.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this trial is taking place at the Dirksen Federal Building in Chicago's Loop. It's that boxy black glass skyscraper at 219 South Dearborn. It's got the red Picasso sculpture outside. But take us inside before I let you go, John. I mean, just describe the courtroom. And I'm picturing a few questions here off the bat, right? What does it look like? Where will the key players be? How far will Madigan and his attorneys be sitting from the jury?
Yeah, not very far. So I'll do my best. It's not a very big courtroom. And I'm kind of surprised they've gone ahead with this room. But it's wood paneled. It's kind of dimly lit. Wooden benches in the back, kind of like you're in church. And to be clear, they're not very comfortable. And in the well of the courtroom, you have three tables. You have one for the government, one for Madigan's defense team, and one for Michael McLean's defense team. And again, nobody's seated very far away from each other. They've got to kind of all cram in there. And then the jury box is if you're facing the judge's bench, is to the left of the government table. And so it's not very spacious, not a lot of room to move around. And it's been interesting to watch so far Michael Madigan and Michael McLean kind of, you know, move around each other, because even though they've been longtime friends, they're now co-defendants. And there's been minimal contact between the two.
Well, if Madigan were to be convicted of these alleged crimes, he is facing some significant prison time. We've been talking with Sun-Times Federal Courts reporter John Seidel about this federal corruption trial of Michael Madigan. Thank you for the details.
Sure. Happy to do it.
Take care.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings context to breaking news. If you're interested in hearing more, you can check out our entire catalog of interviews at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.